Thank you very much, Jess. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Paul Edmondson. I'm a partner in the regulatory group at CMS in London, and I'm spending most of my working life dealing with Brexit issues at the moment. I'm joined today by my CMS colleagues Virginie and Benoit in Belgium, Frank in Germany, and Laurent in France. This is our agenda for the day. I'm going to start with a very brief introduction looking at the current status of the Brexit process. We will then look at some contract continuity issues. We'll consider the risks for UK insurers and intermediaries operating into Europe, how EU insurers and intermediaries can continue with their UK business, and then we'll finish with a little bit of crystal ball gazing as to what happens next and some best and worst case scenarios. If you do have questions, please do submit them into the box. We will try to pick them up during the presentations, and hopefully we will also leave a little bit of time at the end to deal with them as well. So starting very briefly with the politics, and please do forgive me for going over some old ground here, but how did we get ourselves into this particular mess? Well, we obviously held a referendum in June 2016 when we decided that we wanted to leave the EU. Any state that wishes to leave the EU needs to give notice. We gave that Article 50 notice in March 2017. It's a two-year notice period, so we leave on the 29th of March 2019. It is possible to extend the notice period. All 27 EU member states need to agree to that, though. And it is possible for the UK to withdraw the notice and stay in the EU. But at the moment, we are leaving on the 29th of March. As part of the departure process, the UK government and representatives of the EU have agreed in principle a withdrawal agreement. Now, there were long and hard negotiations over that agreement, but an agreement was reached in principle in November 2018. The agreement sets out the terms of the UK's departure from the EU, and it also briefly describes the framework for the future relationship between the UK and the EU. The principal problem is that the terms of that agreement were only agreed in principle by the UK government. And in fact, the agreement needs to be approved by the UK Parliament before it can be signed, and so far the UK Parliament has refused to do that. There will be another vote in Parliament on the 12th of March. Only 17 days before the current departure date. But at the moment, we are leaving on the 29th of March, and the biggest consequence of that for the financial services industry, leaving aside any sort of potential economic downside, is the loss of passport rights. So how will firms, how will UK firms in particular do business going forward, and what happens to existing insurance contracts? On that latter question, I'm going to hand over to Virginie.
A lot of statements have been made on the contract continuity question. One of them was the European Parliament's Brexit coordinator, Guy Verhofstadt, who said he doesn't think there should be any fear for the continuation of contracts post-Brexit. We can, of course, not rely on such statements. As we know, most of the laws of the EU 27 countries are not yet adapted to the situation of a hard Brexit, and this means uncertainty for the insurance sector. If we take the current Belgian Insurance Act as an example, insurers and insurance intermediaries need to be licensed. If they have a license issued in the UK, they can passport it. In case of a hard Brexit, the passporting possibility will stop unless any specific agreement is reached on the passporting issue. What happens then with the policies in this situation? Insurers will potentially insure risks without having the appropriate license. And what is their risk then? Well, if you look at Article 8 of our Belgian Insurance Act, it indicates that the policy is null and void, but that the insurer is still obliged to cover the risk if the policyholder entered into the contract in good faith. This means that the insurer will have to cover the risks, but might not be able to demand payment of the premiums. And on top of this, the insurer might have to pay fines to the regulator because he's operating without license. And the same is true for insurance intermediaries. They might not be able to operate anymore from the UK if they have no license in the EU 27. If we look at Belgium again, insurance mediation has a very, very broad definition. As soon as you're advising on insurance contracts or performing claims handling, you need a valid license to undertake this activity or to continue to undertake the activity post-Brexit. You probably all are aware of the fact that Lloyds has incorporated a subsidiary for its European business in Brussels. They have stated that they will continue to honor all their contractual commitments post-Brexit, and they have sent a letter to all EU 27 regulators in which they mentioned that they assume that the regulators have no issues with the continuation of their business after a hard Brexit on their territories, although they might be breaching certain regulations because of that. We also have several statements of the EIOPA, the European Insurance and Occupational Pensions Authority. The last one was a recommendation that was issued on the 19th of February 2019, and also EIOPA called on the different regulators and asked them to ensure that insurance undertakings with affected cross-border business develop realistic contingency plans that set out measures to prevent insurance activity without a license and to ensure service continuity after UK's withdrawal. What has the Belgian government done in the meantime? Well, there is a draft bill on Brexit that has been deposited in the Belgian Parliament on the 19th of February 2019, and it foresees in a number of preparatory measures in case of Brexit, and only in case of a hard Brexit. So in case there would be a Brexit without agreement with the European Union, with the European government, then we would have the measures of our Brexit law that would apply. And in respect of the financial services companies, the draft Brexit law delegates the power to the federal government to grant transitional relief to financial service companies. With respect to the insurance industry, the Brexit law indicates that the government will first seek advice from the regulator, so meaning the National Bank of Belgium and the FSMA, and will then take necessary measures to ensure and secure the continuity of agreements concluded between insurers, insurance intermediaries, and their clients in Belgium, as these insurers will lose their passporting rights post-Brexit. So in fact, the law foresees in measure taken by the government, but those measures are not clear yet. They are waiting for a specific advice of the Belgian regulator. And we are not aware of any input given by the regulators yet, so we don't know what those measures will be. A second item is that the Brexit law foresees in the creation of a new category of insurance intermediaries. In Belgium, we currently have brokers and agents, but we do not know the concept of underwriting agents or authorized subscribers, so agents who subscribe business for the insurance. As we expect that the Brexit will lead to an increase of the activity of underwriting agents, the draft Brexit law aims to introduce specific rules for this category of insurance intermediaries. They will have to register as insurance intermediaries in the specific register. They will have to have an adequate organization. They cannot combine that activity with the activity of broker and the activity of agent. And they will have an obligation to inform the public of the insurance companies which have given them powers of attorney. So that is what we have up to now as measures in Belgium for a hard Brexit. I think that's not a lot, and we think that in the next coming days/weeks, we'll have more measures that will be made public by the government and the Belgian regulators. I pass the hand to Frank, who will give you a view on how this is dealt with in Germany.
So, hello, this is Frank Wittgen from CMS Cologne office speaking. Thanks to Virginie. As well, with regards to the legal situation applying in Germany, you is to report. The German legislator has passed the Brexit bill on 21st February 2019. The law has not been published yet, but can be published very shortly, depending on the developments in the UK. Besides several other aspects, in particular tax-related ones, the German Brexit Bill deals with service continuity for insurance and reinsurance contracts underwritten by UK risk carriers via freedom of services or via freedom of establishment before Brexit. The measure is not dedicated to safeguard business of UK insurers in the first instance. It is designed to ensure that policyholders do not find that their claims not being paid under existing contracts after the UK leaves the European Union, which looks like increasingly like it would be a hard Brexit. Already at this point, I can highlight that the new law does not enable UK insurers to write new business in Germany. So what is now background and content of the new provision in detail? It is in line with the legal situation described by Germany for Belgium, or a bit in line. Under a German civil law perspective, the insurance contracts are effective even if they contradict German supervisory law. So insurance contracts concluded contradicting an authorization requirement are generally valid. Effectiveness of the insurance contract entered into in accordance with the current supervisory law will not be, will not be ineffective by in case of a hard Brexit. The contract therefore need to be serviced and wind up. Unauthorized insurance business constitutes, however, a criminal offense. So, and in this gap, the new rule of Section 66A, Insurance Supervisory Act is introduced. The new rule states that if the withdrawal of the UK takes effect without a withdrawal agreement having entered into force by that date, the BaFin may order that for a transitional period of maximum 21 months, UK insurers may carry on activities for the purpose of settling claims under contracts concluded up to Brexit. So, winding up of existing contracts will be possible if BaFin issues an order based on the new law. However, underwriting of new business, which means actively renewing business by changing premium or by changing risk coverage, will not be possible. Tacit renewal would not be affected in this regard. What is, however, striking is the 21-month period in this German legal bill. This has been heavily discussed because 21 months is clearly not sufficient to wind up so-called long-tail business like liability insurance businesses. And in particular, the Liberal Party has therefore requested that this maximum period should not be implemented in the law. But in the end, the legislator sticked with this 21-month period. Therefore, we're having actually a settlement period of 21 months applying in Germany in which UK insurers will not be allowed to actively underwrite any new risks. The German legislator has explained within the legislative process that it expects UK insurers to cancel and to fully settle the insurance contract within this transitional period, or if it's not possible, to continue the contract by either obtaining a German license to conduct insurance business via the branch until the extension period has expired, or by obtaining the necessary approval for a portfolio transfer that German insurance companies or European insurance companies can wind up the insurance contract properly. In particular, the 21-month period can, in my view, be criticized. Nevertheless, it's part of the law, and the UK insurers need to prepare for this legal situation. Now, for something different, as well, with regard to insurance mediation post-Brexit, the issue is how insurance contracts can be serviced. There will be no provision. There is no provision in the Brexit bill, and there is no intention to implement a provision later on. So basically, UK insurance intermediaries will no more be allowed to intermediate insurance contracts in Germany after Brexit. This is bad news, but the good news is that insurance intermediaries can apply for a German insurance intermediary. They can establish managing general agencies in Germany, and these intermediaries are authorized by the Chamber of Commerce and Industry in a comparably straightforward authorization procedure. BaFin is here not competent. Currently, and this is striking, in Germany, only the authorization procedure is supervised, but there is no ongoing supervision over insurance intermediaries. For the moment, that's it for Germany. It's a pleasure for me now to hand over to my dear colleague Laurent Mignon from CMS Paris.
Thank you, Frank. Well, the answer to the question of the continuity of insurance services in France in the case of a hot Brexit will be slightly different for UK insurers and UK insurance intermediaries. On 30 January, the French Parliament has delegated powers to the government to legislate on hot Brexit issues in various economic sectors. And according to this, on 6 February, the government has notably issued an ordinance related to financial services. The Article 2 of the ordinance modifies some provisions of the insurance code in a way which confirms that the insurance contracts entered into before Brexit becomes effective will remain valid and enforceable, but it prohibits the renewal of such insurance agreements or endorsements that would result into insurance transactions giving rise to new premiums. In other words, a hard Brexit would not impact the validity of existing French insurance portfolios of UK insurance undertakings, but it imposes the ordinance imposes that such portfolio be subject to a strict runoff management post Brexit. The completion of this runoff is not subject to any time limits. And this is a matter of concern for the French supervisor, the ACPR. The ACPR is worried by the idea of having unauthorized interest going on, having activities in France for years. In the case of contracts bearing long-term commitments, like life insurance contracts, for instance. And so the ACPR, though it has no way to impose that, has already indicated that it would strongly encourage relevant UK undertakings to rapidly transfer this kind of long-bearing commitments portfolio to authorized insurers, and it has already dedicated teams within the ACPR to prioritize and accelerate the treatment of such portfolio transfer applications. What is important to stress is that we are talking here only of direct insurance and not of reinsurance, because reinsurance will not be impacted at all by Brexit, whether hard or not, since third country's reinsurer can already freely operate in France without being subject to any licensing condition or prior approval. The situation is less clear for insurance intermediaries since the ordinance does not contain any provision about insurance mediation services post-Brexit, and it is not anticipated at all to have any specific legislation on the subject. The result of that is that we must conclude that at the time Brexit becomes effective, the UK insurance intermediaries will have to cease immediately to operate in France, at least for distribution activities, since to a very large extent management policy activities are not regulated, escapes regulation. This situation may be worsened by a case law precedent, which results from a decision of the Cour de Cassation, which is the French Supreme Civil Court, issued on 24 October 2018. Under this decision, it was decided that an insurance intermediary, which can no more be listed on the register of insurance intermediaries, which in France is kept by an organism called the ORIAS, this unlisted insurance intermediary can no more receive any distribution commission, even when these commissions are linked to contracts entered into before the intermediary became subject to enlistment. However, in this situation, the right to receive commission is not totally lost, but it has to be transferred to an authorized, duly authorized and registered intermediary. What is interesting to stress that the ORIAS seems ready to accept, and we already have a certain number of examples of that, to accept to directly register French branches of UK insurance intermediaries as French insurance intermediaries, though there is no legislation or regulation to support clearly this position. This registration will, of course, be subject to the branch fulfilling all the conditions to apply to the status of insurance intermediary, notably in terms of professional capacity. That was a high level of what the situation may be in France in the case of hard Brexit, and I now give the floor to Benoît.
Thank you, Laurent. What are the risks for UK insurers and intermediaries operating into Europe? Under a hard Brexit assumption, UK insurers and intermediaries will lose their passporting rights. What does that exactly mean? What will be regarded as European business versus non-European business in the future? This is relevant for existing business, which will need to be split and allocated to the right entity either in the UK or in the EEA. This will be even more relevant for the future business. Paul Edmondson will revert on this shortly. The question is where to draw the line. There is no easy, single answer to that question. The answer will somewhat be driven by a risk appetite assessment. Of course, the most prudent approach would be to allocate a business to the EU entity, as from the moment there is an EU feature or component, be it a risk, a policyholder, an insured, a beneficiary, or even a contact person with the client. However, this approach is quite radical and probably unpracticable. The answer will also be driven by the type of financial institution you are. Insurance companies and insurance intermediaries are regulated by different laws, each of EU inspiration, namely Solvency II on the one hand and Insurance Distribution Directive on the other hand. These regulations do not have an identical scope of application. And the local implementing laws in each EEA country may create further differentiation in approach. When dealing with these matters on a global scale and running the assessment within each EEA country, CMS has come to conclusions showing certain trends. For insurance companies, the activities will be regarded in most instances as European business and therefore require license if the policyholder or insured is EU-based and also if the risk is located in the EU, regardless the location of the parties. For insurance intermediaries, the conclusions are more nuanced and there are gray zones which can attract risk, as this may vary from country to country. The concept of insurance distribution is widely defined. It barely captures any action in the preparation or performance of an insurance policy. First to be noted, while the Insurance Distribution Directive is not meant to be applicable for non-EU risk, certain local laws do not contain such a carve-out. Moreover, we identified that most EEA countries consider that the location of the risk in their country is the trigger of their local mediation rules and licensing requirements. This will be predominantly driven by the location of the policyholder, but not exclusively, and typically where the assets, like a property, is based in a country. However, for certain other regulators, the focus is made on the location of the actual performance of the mediation services and whether the local territory is targeted in sort of active marketing. Location of the risk itself would not be directly relevant in those cases. This uncertainty requires that UK intermediaries take opportunistic decisions as regards the criteria that will determine what they consider as European business and non-European business moving forward. This is made even more complex as we know that insurance is most of the time global, cross-border, covering risk in multiple locations, and sometimes for numerous group companies worldwide. The carrying on of a regulated activity on the European territory will obviously trigger a regulatory breach risk, which can imply administrative sanctions, criminal sanctions. You will also have a potential reputational risk and future issues in answering to fit and proper tests. You might also question the validity of certain policies themselves. We have already touched base on that. On the next slide, you will find an illustration of certain sanctions in Belgium, Germany, and France. You will see that it is not harmonized, but the amounts can be quite significant. I now hand over to Paul on this.
Thank you, Benoit. Thank you very much. So we hear all that, and there are clearly challenges, but what should you really worry about if you're a UK insurer or intermediary? If you're doing new business for EA clients, yes, you absolutely need to get this right. You will need to be appropriately authorised if you're dealing with EA customers or if you're an insurer insuring EA risks. The question is, though, what is right in those circumstances? As Benoit quite rightly pointed out, for intermediaries in particular, this is often a question of risk appetite and how close to that grey line you are prepared to walk. The issues for servicing existing business should hopefully be slightly less of a concern if you are simply fulfilling existing contractual commitments. My colleagues have already spoken about the position in their particular jurisdictions. There does seem to be a softening of EIOPA's stance here. And back in 2017, it was saying, and quite rightly, that insurance contracts concluded before Brexit by UK insurers are in principle valid, but without taking mitigating actions before the withdrawal, insurers will usually not be able to ensure continuity of their services with regard to such cross-border insurance contracts, which may prevent them from fulfilling these contracts. Now, that's worrying both from a policyholder and from an insurer perspective. By February 2019, we have a slight change of approach. EIOPA has said that competent authorities should apply a legal framework or mechanism to facilitate the orderly runoff of business which became unauthorised. And the focus of regulatory prohibitions is then very much on new business. It talks about UK undertakings concluding new insurance contracts, establishing, renewing, extended, increasing, resuming cover. That's what requires authorisation. So the UK insurance industry has seen this latest EIOPA recommendation as being quite a good sign for contract continuity purposes. The difficulty, though, as we've seen already, is that different countries are adopting widely differing approaches. So we've heard about the approaches in Belgium, Greece, Germany, and France. Ireland has provided for a 3-year runoff period. Spain has given us a measly 9 months to sort things out. And that 9-month period is with the aim of enabling the insurer to terminate or assign contracts in favour of a duly authorised insurance company in an orderly manner, or to allow the insurer to apply for authorisation. So in other words, the sort of the UK industry is going to have to track the position on a country-by-country basis. Anyway, temporarily, that's enough of the woes affecting the UK industry. I'm going to move on to a slightly happier story, which is how can EEA insurers and intermediaries continue business with their UK clients? In the short term, there are a number of UK proposals to allow business to continue without interruption. In the short term, there is the proposed temporary permissions regime and an orderly runoff regime. In the long term, a number of insurers and intermediaries might be able to carry on with their existing business without any UK authorisation at all. And if that's not possible, they can, of course, apply for authorisation. I'm just going to look briefly at each of these. Starting with the temporary permissions regime. If you are an EU incorporated and authorised insurer or intermediary, and you have exercised passport rights into the UK under Solvency II or the IDD, and you register with the UK regulator prior to the 28th of March 2019, then you will be given temporary authorisation to continue the business that you have passported. That will stay in place for up to 3 years, and the idea is that during that period you can apply for full authorisation from the relevant UK regulator. Now, there will be a wider range of UK regulatory requirements applying to you as an EU institution than there currently are at present. However, having said that, all existing EU laws and rules are being implemented into UK law. And the UK regulators are proposing to allow substituted compliance in many areas. So in other words, even after Brexit, the UK regulators will allow EU insurers and intermediaries to comply with their home state rules in a number of areas, rather than having to worry about UK rules. The next part of the solution is the UK's runoff regime. This will apply automatically to all firms who are in runoff, and it will allow firms to fulfil their pre-existing contractual obligations. It doesn't allow any new business to take place, though. Obviously, the temporary permission regime will allow new business. The runoff regime does not. If you have a branch in the UK, you will go into what's known as supervised runoff. So you will actually be regulated and supervised by the UK authorities. If you currently operate only on a freedom of services basis, then you're into contractual runoff, so you'll not be supervised by the UK regulators at all. That period will go on for five, that period goes for 5 years. The runoff regime after 5 years or 15 years for insurance. I mentioned that there is some possibility of the EU insurers and intermediaries carrying on their UK business without any UK authorisation at all. This is potentially a long-term solution for some entities. There are two possibilities there. The first is that you operate in a way which means you are not carrying on the regulated activities in the UK. So, for example, insurers can structure their business so that they are effecting and carrying out contracts of insurance outside the UK. Intermediaries can structure their arrangements so that they are carrying on their mediation activities outside the UK. And there are lots of insurers, Bermuda reinsurers, for example, that rely on that at the moment. The second option is for insurers, or rather for intermediaries, to rely on an exemption. Now, this will be no help at all, I'm afraid, to EU insurers, but there is an exemption known as the overseas person exclusion. Precise requirements of the exclusion are detailed, and they do vary from activity to activity. But in summary, it says that if you carry on a regulated activity with a UK client, but you don't do it from a permanent establishment in the UK, and you comply with UK marketing rules, then you don't need to be regulated to carry on that activity. And this, is often relied upon by non-EU financial institutions to do business with UK clients. If you can't rely on an exclusion and you want to carry on your UK business, you will need to apply for authorisation from the relevant UK regulator. That's the PRA for insurers, the FCA for intermediaries. Firms who enter the temporary permission regime will be given a landing slot. So that is a time over the next 3 years during which they will apply to the regulator for full authorisation. One of the questions that will need to be answered in those circumstances is whether you are going to set up a new UK subsidiary or apply for branch authorisation for your existing EU entity. And there are pros and cons to both of those. In particular, a question as to whether you want the UK regulator having oversight over the EU company as a whole or just a UK subsidiary. In addition, the PRA has given some guidance which says that if you're an insurance company and you are going to have an exposure of over £500 million to the compensation scheme, so if you're carrying on business which might expose the UK financial services compensation scheme to £500 million worth of losses, then they are expecting you to set up a subsidiary rather than authorise a branch. Now, that is only an expectation. It's not a hard and fast rule, and we are liaising with the regulators for a number of non-UK insurers at the moment to ascertain whether branch or subsidiary is required. But whatever you need, whichever option you go for, all firms will need to have a UK presence. If you want to be authorised, you need a well-considered and realistic business plan, adequate resources, and competent and effective management. Moving on to a bit of crystal ball gazing and speculating on what might happen next. Hopefully, there will be a new deal agreed to govern the relationship between the UK and the EU going forward, and that will include the financial services industry. That is certainly what's envisaged by the political declaration attached to the draft withdrawal agreement. The problem is that the details of what might be agreed are incredibly sparse at the moment. The political declaration talks about an agreement that close and structured cooperation on regulatory and supervisory matters is in the mutual interest. It will be based on principles of regulatory autonomy, transparency, and stability, and it should include transparency and appropriate consultation, information exchange, and consultation on regulatory initiatives and other issues of mutual interest. What do I take from that rather bland statement? A number of things. Firstly, the UK government has largely abandoned the financial services industry here. It is not asking for passporting rights in the new arrangement or anything similar. There will be no special deal really between the UK and the EU, and anything that is agreed will be based on the EU's existing equivalence regime. So equivalence is a concept that's baked into existing EU financial services regulation. And the idea is that if the European Commission finds that the regulatory regime of a third country is equivalent to that of the EU, then certain consequences flow. The problem for the UK industry is that the regime is currently very limited, the equivalence regimes are currently very limited, and the consequences that flow from equivalence are usually there to benefit EU financial institutions rather than third country firms. So, for example, under the Insurance Distribution Directive, there is no equivalence regime at all. There is nothing there to help intermediaries. There is an equivalence regime under Solvency II, and it's very important, particularly for third country reinsurers, but it doesn't provide market access. Under Solvency II, if a third country is assessed as equivalent by the Commission, there are three consequences. The most talked about from a Brexit perspective is the one that the reinsurance one, which says in effect that if an EEA insurer buys reinsurance from a reinsurer that is authorised in an equivalent third country, then the EEA insurer can take credit for that reinsurance in the same way as it could if it had bought it from an EEA reinsurance company. So in other words, there are capital benefits for the EEA insurance company. It's not intended to give benefits to the third country reinsurer particularly, and it doesn't give any doesn't give that reinsurer the right to carry on any regulated activity in the EU. So the reinsurer will either have to get licensed in the EU or structure its activities to say outside the scope of regulation. The other two equivalence provisions relating to group supervision and the use of accounts which are drawn up under third country rules. So as I said, very limited and certainly not a solution for the UK insurance industry at the moment, which is why the government is proposing to ask for a broader and enhanced equivalence regime. So the quote on the screen at the moment is taken from the UK government explainer, which goes alongside the withdrawal agreement and the political declaration. It says that the UK and EU have committed to keeping their financial services equivalence frameworks under review. They've also agreed that it will be in the interest of both sides to have a close and structured approach to the regulation of supervision of financial services. The idea is that that closer cooperation will provide the industry with greater predictability around the adoption and withdrawal of equivalence decisions. So what does that mean in practice? From the discussions I've been having with the Treasury, it means very much that each side, so the UK and the EU, will remain responsible for its own equivalence decisions. It will have an absolute discretion to determine when equivalence is appropriate and also to withdraw equivalence. But there might be some more formality around the process to grant equivalence and in particular to withdraw equivalence. So I know the UK government is trying to get to the position where equivalence decisions that are in place can't simply be withdrawn on a whim and without following due process and giving appropriate notice. There's also a desire to persuade the EU to expand the equivalence regime so that it applies in a wider range of areas and gives a wider range of benefits. I wouldn't hold your breath on that one. If that is going to be achieved, it is going to take some time. But it is possible that over time, something might be agreed, for example, in the areas of reinsurance and possibly in other commercial insurance areas. But even in a best case scenario, it's unlikely to be a solution for the insurance industry as a whole to rely on enhanced equivalence. So the best case scenario is not brilliant. The worst case scenario is even worse. And I hand over to Benoit to talk about WTO and GATS.
Thank you, Paul. Regarding the GATS and WTO treaties, there are two different concepts. The first one is the most favored nation treatment, pursuant to which each WTO state must provide suppliers from any foreign country a treatment no less favorable than it provides to similar suppliers from any other foreign country. So that's an equivalence between foreign players coming into your country. The other concept is the concept of national treatment, which means that a member state should provide to a supplier of any other member of the WTO a treatment no less favorable than it provides to its own local suppliers. That rule on national treatment is not compulsory. However, a large number of EU members have voluntarily agreed to permit national treatment for third country suppliers, third country insurance companies, to supply insurance of risk in shipping, commercial aviation, space launching and freight, goods in transit, reinsurance and retrocession, and to permit residents to purchase the insurance just mentioned. Be aware that this national treatment is not a generality, is not a sort of passporting, automatic passporting, but it enables third country insurers to provide those insurance under the same conditions as the local players. Certain EU countries, such as Belgium and France, have made that quite simple for third country insurers. A mere notification to the Belgian regulator is sufficient to start such activities in Belgium. The slide just shows the content of such a notification, a declaration from the home country regulator stating that the solvency is sufficient, not objecting to the project, is sufficient for the third country insurer to start offering those products and policies to Belgian residents and Belgian nationals. And the same apply to France, while in Germany seems more difficult. So there is here, under the GATT and WTO rules, a very limited door that could enable certain access to certain EU markets for third country insurers. This brings us to the end of the formal presentation and webinar, and we can start with the Q&A. Having received a few questions, maybe we can start with this one. A question about insurers and intermediaries that are contemplating or have already set up new companies across Europe, and how do have dealt with their UK employees, clients, and contracts? Quite broad question, and maybe Virginie, you can take the lead on that.
Yeah, maybe I can start on that. So we are indeed advising and assisting some insurers and brokers who look at different countries for the establishment of a subsidiary. In each of those countries, if we look at Belgium, you see that Amlin Navigators, Lloyd's is in Belgium. You also see some brokers who follow Lloyd's to Belgium and who constitute companies through an acquisition. If you look at GLT, they've done an acquisition in Belgium. But also some other brokers have chosen to set up a new company. And the worry that there is for insurers and brokers is the question that we have is a lot. What about the substance? Can we keep working with the talented people that we have right now in the UK, or do we have to start recruiting new employees to make them deliver the insurance or insurance mediation services in your country? And so that's a question that is often the purpose of our discussion. Can we constitute a branch in the UK, and can we keep those people working in the UK and deliver activities through the branch in the UK? And the regulator, at least in Belgium, is open to discuss the substance question. Looks at are there sufficient people to consider that you have a real business in Belgium, and I'm sure that's the same in other European jurisdictions. Is there have to be some people in the country, and you have to respect a certain substance. But of course, you can still use the talented people that you have in the UK. I don't know, Paul, whether you would like to add something from the UK perspective on this.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, what a lot of clients are doing is they are establishing their new regulated entities in the EU, but they are also passporting those back into the UK, either under Solvency II or the Insurance Distribution Directive, so that the EU entity will have a UK branch. They will then take advantage of the temporary permissions regime to allow that branch to continue for a while, and ultimately they will need to apply for authorization for that branch, but that is some way down the line. And then what we are finding is that very often the employees who are currently providing services into Europe for a UK entity find themselves operating on behalf of the UK entity for UK business and on behalf of the newly passported EU entity for EU business. So lots of people hopefully can just carry on doing the same job as they've been doing now. It's just that they will be wearing two hats, if you like, of the UK and the EU insurers or intermediaries. And that requires some structuring, obviously. So appropriate arrangements need to be put in place from an HR perspective. Sometimes employees are transferring under 2P. Often they are just being seconded so that they can operate on behalf of both legal entities. Supplier contracts need to be looked at and potentially extended so that they cover both legal entities. And certainly there is a need for customer communications and potentially new terms of business so that clients are serviced by the right entity, either the UK organisation, the EU organisation, or both. And lots of firms are in sort of process of sending out those client communications at the moment. Just looking at other questions that we have had, I've had a request to just explain a little bit more about how EU organisations can keep out of the scope of regulation. Again, it requires some slightly complex structuring potentially, but both insurers and intermediaries can, as I said, potentially do business with UK clients without being authorised here. So for an insurer, the relevant UK regulated activity is effecting or carrying out contracts of insurance. To avoid regulation, you need to make sure that you're doing both of those activities outside the UK. So lots of Bermudan reinsurers, for example, operate on that basis at the moment. They make sure that they enter into the contracts that they conclude with UK cedents outside the UK, typically in Bermuda, obviously, and they make sure that they service the contracts from Bermuda. Again, for intermediaries, that there's a similar approach can be adopted. So if you are based outside the UK and you don't have a presence here, it is quite possible that you can continue to service and advise UK clients without falling within the UK regulatory net. There are a range of potential different regulated activities that you will be carrying on, potentially advising on insurance, dealing as agent in insurance, arranging deals in insurance, and the analysis needs to be done separately for each of those activities. But typically, a combination of the territorial scope of the UK regime and the exclusions, in particular the overseas persons exclusion in the UK regime, mean that you can potentially structure your business to carry on operating with UK clients without needing UK authorisation. And the details of that will obviously vary from one business to another. Just looking at any other questions that have come in that while I've been talking.
I saw a question about France. Do you want me to answer that?
Yeah, please do, Laurent. That would be great.
There is a question about monthly renewable insurance contracts, and the question is whether this would be considered to give rise to insurance transactions in paying new premiums. Actually, if we are really talking about renewals, monthly renewals, the position is that post-hard Brexit, the renewal is no more possible. So the question won't be to see if there are or not new premiums. The fact is that the contracts will have to end definitely at the end of the current month following Brexit. If we are talking about the contract with an annual premium payable in 12 installments, the situation is different. These installments, though becoming due after Brexit, will remain due and there will be no problem. There are also questions about non-admitted insurance from the French side. Non-admitted insurance cover reinsurance, we talked about that, but also air and marine transportation, which can be dealt with by any insurer of any third countries, without being subject to any passporting or licensing or prior approval. And of course, UK interests will be able to continue servicing clients on those for those kinds of risks. What is more complex is the situation of intermediaries with regard to reinsurance and non-admitted risks, because the current position is to consider that though these are activities that can be carried out by insurers without approval, intermediaries for this risk remain subject to regulation, so UK intermediaries will not be allowed to intermediate for non-admitted risks.
Yeah, maybe there's one question concerning insurance intermediation supervision in Germany. As mentioned before in the presentation, there is only authorization supervision in Germany under the current regime. So at the moment, actually, there is no ongoing supervision. The authorization is issued by the Chamber of Industry and Commerce. BaFin is not supervising the intermediaries itself, but there is an indirect supervision of BaFin concerning the intermediaries. So BaFin is supervising the insurance companies, whether they are actually working together with proper insurance intermediaries, but there is no direct supervision concerning intermediaries at the moment in Germany.
Maybe taking on another question on the wholesale model and whether this would be captured under the IDD. We think that the most prudent approach, which is shared by us and we think by the market, is to consider that the wholesale business indeed falls under the concept of distribution.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Benoit. We've had a question: is the opinion of the Lloyd's what's our opinion on the Lloyd's reassurance to pay European claims post Brexit, even though where this could break local law and regulation, and whether syndicates hold the risk here? Syndicates would only hold the risk, I think, if that is how things are agreed with Lloyd's. So, from a sort of pure legal perspective, that would be Lloyd's underwriting that business and a Lloyd's risk. So, it's a question as to how it sort of flows through into the arrangements with syndicates. We're being inundated with questions. Anybody else? Oh, the conflict between WTO GATT rules and EU regimes, and what will be the forum for determining which regime takes precedence post-Brexit? The fact of the matter is that passporting, the EU regime vis-a-vis the UK will undoubtedly fall away at Brexit. It is possible that something else might take its place if there is a new agreement between the UK and the EU. That those new arrangements might be based on the equivalence regime that I talked about earlier on. If nothing else is put in place, then we fall back to WTO and GATS. So that's the sort of the last resort, if you like. I am conscious that we were due to finish at 11. So I think at that point, I would like to thank everybody for joining.